these like totally incompetent people.
It is absolutely ridiculous. You're right. I can't believe it. But it goes back to what we were just talking about. This is like, this is literally written down the collapse of society. Well, it may have been some lady that a lot of people think are crazy wrote a book about the collapse of American society. Read the book. Looks a lot like what's going on right now. Ain't no workers. The fuel pumps don't fucking work.
No, they work. They just pump out shit that's way too expensive.
But they do that. But no, I was at the place today. I got gas. 4 out of the 8 pumps. Not functional.
It's like, I mean,
I go to lots of gas stations. There's always at least one pump with a bag over the fucking handle.
It's like I was on a local news station. You know, I was just taking a break, and local news station was like, Biden arrives in Portland live. And I was like, wow, you know, I'm not sure. I've seen the president driving in real life. I've seen that. But I don't think I've ever seen it on the news in Portland. All right, let's check this out.
They shut down I-5.
Yeah, that's what they do. They shut down the airport. They shut down everything.
They shut down the freeway here when the Dalai Lama came.
I'd rather protect the Dalai Lama, frankly. Right.
There's 6 people sitting there watching this. And a big news crew. There were more people in the news crew filming the people watching this than there were people watching it. Then he comes whipping through, heads on down to a Baskin Robbins, and like it's like a classic just pull away, because he's down in a Baskin Robbins with the gubernatorial candidate here in Oregon, on the Democrat side, Tina Kotek, the unfortunately named Tina Kotek. You can see Tina Kotek on the background, and she's about to sort of come over and join the fray with the news crew talking to Biden when they say, so how's the economy? He says, the economy's strong. And she veers
turns
off.
Turns around and leaves.
She veers off like a fighter jet over Israel, man. It was like Top Gun. It was just like just a steep bank. The G-forces. She was pulling in that Baskin Robbins.
It's not hard looking at our gubernatorial situation. Who wants to be governor? I'm surprised the last one wasn't fucking lynched. I guess she's still current. Kate Brown's still in office, right?
Can you say that word?
Lynched? I don't know. But like, it's surprising to me how many people were so angry at her.
Yeah, the fact that she wasn't drawn and quartered.
I'm not entirely sure.
I think it was unfounded anger. First off,
I don't know why they were so angry.
Because mask mandates and shit. It was all that like.
But she's literally the most the current governor, Kate Brown, until the election. She's literally the most unpopular governor in the United States.
Well, we did our fair share of it during that time, but that was because there was a lot of helpless feeling, and that's and it's a convenient scapegoat. Take it out on her. But, you know, it's like, hello, she's not actually concerned about whether or not the three of us get together.
She was just and do general it. Well-being.
She's like looking out. She's trying to look out for the entire freaking state. Well, and I kind of get that.
Well, but also, as I'll argue, it's never just her. It's always her and a horde of other people that make a decision.
But also,
right?
in terms of the lockdowns and mask mandates and the yada yada we had here in Oregon, it was pretty much in keeping with any Democrat state. The stuff here was not any more severe than it in any Democrat governor state. Michigan, Jesus Christ, you drove after 6 p.m., they'd arrest you.
Right.
You know, California was about the same restrictions, but in terms of governor fucking around with Newsom over at the 4-star restaurant with nobody wearing masks, you know, Kate Brown didn't really have quite that trouble, so I don't really know why she was less popular than, you know, Governor Hairgel.
at least from my point of view, the thing that was so frustrating is that everything was just spur of the moment. It's like, effective tomorrow at 7 p.m., everything shuts down again. Okay,
yeah,
now maybe we'll go ahead and we'll open up
the soft openings.
You and me went to your club, like sort of square one, I don't know, first week of the heavy lockdowns. And I remember going in there and being like, this is like a hurricane hit. This is crazy to shut this stuff down like that. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the reason why she's so unpopular is because the libertarian aspect of Oregon is a little bit stronger than it is in other Democrat states. So maybe there was a little bit of a more rebellious attitude against it.
That's a good call. I hadn't thought of it that way.
I think maybe that's why it was.
Because, I mean, we are the libertarian faction.
Yeah. If you want to find yourself a crazy wacko libertarian, come here.
Yeah. Yeah, you step into this red room. Mm-hmm.
All right. On that note, that's probably enough politics for right now.
Yeah, like
I'm surprised you didn't think about that, man.
I haven't thought. I know. But do you feel right a little bit? And I didn't even
do you
think
feel
about
a little
it.
Bit validated because you're kind of a libertarian, not so.
I'm a card carrying libertarian.
Oh, card carrying.
My fucking card is in my wallet. Well, right then, next to my reverend's license.
Why didn't you join Lane County Libertarian Community
because
on Facebook?
Because libertarians are lunatics. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So you are you're an old school libertarian.
I'm an old school libertarian.
You've been libertarian long enough to realize
I've been libertarian
this is the
since
crazy
I first
party.
Registered to vote.
Oh, me too. But I stopped.
All right, that's enough.
I got
politics.
too much junk mail.
Enough politics. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else who's probably not listening any longer, we are Ruined Heroes, a weekly free and self-produced podcast wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a guy who loves celibacy. John.
Well, I just want to change everybody.
And Rupert.
Wow, Mr. Locktober.
You like that?
Yeah, I guess No Nut November is coming up for you, Mr. Celibate. You know, you should time your. I know a woman who's actually become a Buddhist priest this past week. So maybe you should consider the same path.
Goals.
Yeah, goals. You know, learn to excel at poverty.
Please leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It's free for you. It helps us out with exposure and all that kind of crap. To interact with us, we are ruinedheroespod@gmail.com, as well as easily found on Facebook and Twitter, where you get weekly hints, say hi, take guesses. We dig when you do. If you would like to get extra content, as well as help with the cost of the show, you can subscribe at patreon.com/ruinedheroes and get in starting at just $1 a month. There are links in the show notes, as well as on our website, ruinedheroes.com, where you can also find older episodes. Thank you to those who do give. We really appreciate it. Pretty fucking cool. Intro. For the record, I don't know that you're going to get this one. It's a little obscure.
A little obscure.
Not super obscure, but a little obscure. These are all quotes by the topic, by the way. All the inventions and devices ever constructed by the human hand or conceived by the human mind, no matter how delicate, how intricate and complicated, are simple, childish toys compared with that most marvelously wrought mechanism, the human body.
Lenny da Vinci.
No, we did him.
We did him. Okay, the human
long
body.
Time ago, though. Fair.
Mr. Gray, the guy who wrote Gray's Anatomy?
No. Interesting guess.
Who is Mr. Gray? Who's Gray?
I don't
Gray?
Know. Who is I don't know.
It's a really nice book. I remember
it
like,
is.
I want one for my medical collection.
Right, exactly. Gray. Whenever the back
but
when,
they're always like $60.
There is
or more.
$60. Yes. I always thought I could find like a past date one or something.
Well, and that's what I found one
like
that
an
was
older
like,
version.
It was like marked $14, written in hand, you know, in pencil like they do in bookstores on the first page at an antique store. And I walked up and they pulled a card out of the book. And it said like $60.
Yeah.
I was like, no, says $14 fucking dollars right here.
It's like,
no, $60. I was like, I'm not buying it then.
That person paid $14, which means you paid $2, and now you want
right.
$60 out of me?
Fuck this.
Get out of here with your get rich quick scheme used bookstore.
Next one. Highly seasoned meats, stimulating sauces, and dainty tidbits in endless variety irritate the nerves and react upon the sexual organs.
Oh.
So fucking bonkers.
Is this that guy who wrote the original French cookbook?
No. They're American, if that helps. There's a movie that is about them, but really poorly historically accurate.
Just like this podcast.
True. True. Good point. There's reviews that say that.
Yeah.
Next one.
Is this somebody involved in nutrition?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. When we eat vegetables...
Linus Spaulding, or the guy who invented vitamins.
No. Oh, you're getting closer.
Who is the vitamin
when
guy?
It's not the vitamin guy. When we eat vegetarian foods, we needn't worry about what kind of disease our food died from. This makes a joyful meal. The last one's long. I got four, but the last one's a long one.
Yeah, Linus Pauling was the guy I was thinking of. Edward Case.
No.
Oh, man.
Although he's been on the list for a while.
Wow, I thought that was for sure.
A remedy for masturbation, which is almost always successful in small boys, is circumcision, especially when there is a small degree of phimosis. Phimosis is where the foreskin won't retract correctly, apparently. Anyway, I had to look it up. I left it. We could stop all that right now and just move on. Oh, we're going to have some fun. The operation...
I don't think you'd think... You know what that word means.
The operation...
That word does not what you...
Should be performed by a surgeon without administering anesthetic. As a brief pain attending the operation will have a salutary effect on the mind, especially if it be connected with the idea of punishment, as it may well be in some cases. The soreness, which continues for several weeks, interrupts the practice, and if it had not all or had not previously become too firmly fixed, it may be forgotten and not resumed.
So we're dealing with sort of a vegetarian pervert.
Vegetarian pervert who is very against masturbation. Yes, sir, we are.
Dr. Spock?
No, but he's been on the list before, too.
I think because you've said it's obscure, I'm just not going to get it.
Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, the reason you have breakfast cereal.
Oh, man. This guy's a nutcase.
This guy's loony.
This is loony. The Kellogg story is about as crazy as some of the baking powder stories. Yeah, it's and about proximate in the same time. Wow.
Sources. Yeah.
Anybody that looks like he does?
We're going to get into a lot of this.
If you look like that, you've got nutcase written all over you.
Get into it.
You look like Colonel fucking Sanders, dude.
He looks like Colonel Sanders.
I look like that.
He looks like...
Yes! You're a nut job!
He looks like the homosexual baby of Colonel Sanders and Jack Daniels.
Let's see here. Looks like a freak, sexually frustrated, and is opinionated, thinks he knows the right way to control the world.
You don't
know. Yeah, that's you!
You don't know. So just the sources alone will give you a little hint. Library.uthsca.edu, allthat'sinteresting.com, eugenicsarchive.ca, forbes.com, thefamouspeople.com, and there's a great two-parter by the Behind the Bastards on this guy and some of the history before him. There's a link in the notes. Wow, oh, this guy is something. I'm so glad you picked the right one this week. Born John Harvey Kellogg, February 26, 1852, in Tyrone, Michigan, to parents John Preston Kellogg and Ann Jeanette Stanley, formerly Stanley, of course. Ann Stanley was John Sr.'s second wife, the first having died, giving him six kids, and his second wife, Stanley, they'd have 11 more kids, so for a total of 17, yeah.
That's like the Mormon Tabernacle.
It's a lot of fucking kids. Well, no.
He's fielding an entire football team.
It's not Mormon, but we're getting there.
He wants to field an entire football team and have reserves.
Mm-hmm. So,
wow, that's like nuts.
Mom and dad were shopkeepers, so they made a decent living. But between their 16 kids and the tithing to the Seventh-day Adventist church, money was tight.
That's like messed up, man. When you're tithing so much that money is tight, that's like...
Wait, 17 kids. That didn't help either.
Well, I was just going to church and just be like, 17, man. I'm out. I can't.
It's okay. Let's put it this way. I've got so many kids that the church is actually having to help me. How about I don't give you any money and you don't give me any money?
Yeah. How about that? How about I'm the guy at the receiving door on the church?
Yeah.
I'm that person over there.
So, I got a whole army here. They could clean the damn thing for free.
Although, let's face it, like, you know, back then, raising kids was a lot less expensive.
No.
You just worked them until they died.
Yeah, there was no college, and slave labor was perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, it was perfectly fine. Like,
every kid got a job at 11.
Oh, yeah, or four.
You
know. So. Go plow the field, Johnny.
So, John Sr. had moved to Michigan because this was the place to be as a member of the strict church that began as an apocalyptic side branch of Christianity. So the tithing could not be set aside. Hence, there was some serious malnutrition amongst the family, and younger John was often ill. It is said that his lack of nutrition contributed to him being only 5'2" tall and rather slender. So he's a little guy. And obviously might have burst some of his interest in nutrition.
Well, he was only 5'2".
Yep.
Girls could not resist
his stare. Short man complex.
Subsequently, Mr. Kellogg was never called an asshole.
Down there was no Ronnie James Dio, this one. Anyway, yeah. So the younger John Kellogg was thought to be one of the smarter of all the kids and would educate himself since Dad and his religion believed that the world was going to end. So he never sent any of them to actual school.
Again, having kids back then was a little bit cheaper. You're not shucking out for football uniforms.
Why are you having 17 kids if you religiously believe the world's going to fucking end within your lifetime?
Because the more kids you have, the better off you get to go into heaven.
Yeah, you don't know that?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know that, man.
Even at the end of the race?
You know, for somebody who prepares for the end of the world, you're very ill-prepared. You know,
kid is not going to cut it.
No. No.
It's not. You're going to be over.
I'm content with where I'm going. That's why no kids.
Yeah, you're going to be in the nosebleed seats in heaven, like, you know, end of the world comes and God's going to just be like, nope. Sorry, he just had one, man.
Out.
Yeah.
That Saint and Peter's all the like, vices, dude, you don't even see ya.
Yeah. No. It's not going to cut it. I think he's going to be running a mop up in the pearly gates.
He's going to have a better seat than you. And why? That, more kids.
That's going to be degrading.
He makes it really further degrading into heaven than you do. And I'm not going to be able to see the show because you're taller than me.
If we get to heaven and I have a gold halo and you have a silver one and I'm mocking you, you're not going to like it.
It'll feel like an average Wednesday night.
It's going to, yeah. Yeah, it'll be just sort of like real life, you know? Be like that.
Yeah, but you won't have to wear glasses anymore and you still will because he'll fix your eyesight.
Oh, that's right. There is a vision and dental plan
uh-huh.
if you're in the gold halo realm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there is. You do get that bump. Not the matching 401k, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Do they have 401ks so in funny. Heaven? I mean, what are you going to use it for?
No, but you might get your own golf cart.
Yeah.
It makes it a whole lot easier to get around.
Ooh.
I'm about to like pedal that. His goddamn rickshaw of a golf cart.
No, it just floats. You're up in the clouds.
Yeah.
Like a cloud golf cart?
Goddamn right.
It's going to be freaking amazing, man.
It is said that our little John Kellogg...
Solid gold clubs?
Papa Wheelie.
It is said that our little John Kellogg eventually became some kind of teacher's aide and was teaching by the age of 16, also having still never gone to real school. Times were different.
Jobs were easier to come by, I guess. Teacher's aide at 16 and you don't have no schooling?
I don't know. So,
well, you're self-educated.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes it even worse.
Or maybe you're teaching in the New York public school system. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Growing up in Battle Creek, Michigan, he was deeply indoctrinated.
Should I go to community college?
He was deeply indoctrinated by the church he was part of. They were a large part of the growing temperance movement and heartily opposed to sex in general, but especially masturbation.
Okay, these guys with 17 kids who are opposed to sex, can we talk about them a little bit?
It's a hiccup.
Do they just like...
No, they're opposed to masturbation.
No, well, he said sex.
They're opposed to sex and for pleasure.
Uh-huh.
Sex should be done for procreation purposes only. It's a tool. That's where these people do it. And then they do it 17 fucking times.
Well, why do you think that that's one of the clauses? Have as many kids to get into heaven. They built a back door into that belief system.
I mean, I have to say, like...
You have to have sex to get into heaven, but you have to hate the fact that you're doing it. Because if you don't hate yourself... then you're not doing something right.
I have to say I have a certain fascination with that. Like, how exactly do you have sex without pleasure and just for procreation? How does that work?
Well, it's a heavily masculine-driven thing. Because a woman can easily have sex without pleasure.
Yeah.
And still procreate.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible for a man to have no pleasure and procreate.
That's right, masturbation.
Exactly. Just saying.
That's the part thing that I wonder about is, like, how does the man feign no pleasure? Is he, like, reading a book? Oh, we're done.
It's time for the normal Wednesday, Martha.
You just, like, sort of walk out.
It only took 3 minutes, and you get up and walk away and get
dressed. Yeah, I imagine it's fast.
You're right. None of it makes sense. There's a lot of religious shit that I don't understand. This is one nodule.
It's not like we're going to be signing up for the Seventh-day Adventist fucking quarterly newspaper, okay?
Well, all right, so quick back history on them. They literally set a date that the world was going to end. And it didn't happen. Then they set another one. After like their fourth one, they quit setting a date and just decided it was going to be soon.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Because everything is soon in God's realm.
Yeah, it's all this like Mayan calendar BS, like mm-hmm. where it's like Nostradamus, like all these idiots, like, oh, they predicted it here. Oh, no, we forgot to carry the one. No, it's really here. No.
They were carving calendars into stone, okay? Yeah. Do you think that they got tired?
Yeah. You would think they'd get the math right.
It's like, no, uh-uh. They did get the math right originally. It's us that fucked it up.
Oh, we forgot to...
We didn't know to carry the one.
We didn't transcribe rooster, egg, / feather.
No, it was just correctly. / feather. Because, yeah. You know, that shit's over 2,000 years old.
Upside down V.
Right.
Yeah, we just got that stuff a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Kellogg, we're just dealing with a younger Kellogg now. Well, his brother will come in later, but... Would work under... would work under, perhaps apprentice under, James Springer White, one of the co-founders of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So this is how indoctrinated they are. They also called him Elder White, and he is one of your social media hints this week.
Which is probably one of the reasons why... Well, let's see here. He got a job as a teacher. He was probably teaching the Seventh-day Adventist.
There's a lot going wrong here.
Well, I think pretty much any sort of ministry is the closest thing we get to a guild system these days, where you got to apprentice, and a lot of times that involves non-payment and sexual favors and all that sort of thing.
So, Catholic Church. Got it.
Well, kind of. Buddhist Church. Everything. Like, they're all, like, really big into the apprentice thing. They're not very big on a regular paycheck.
You know, it's like a martial, any martial arts system.
But they'll
let you live on site.
Yeah, you get some housing accommodations as goes the Atlanta
and a
race.
Cracker and a tiny bit of wine once in a while if you're in the right religion.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I would be taking my fill of that sacramental wine.
So White
it's
had
good. It's like Manischewitz. I love that wine.
Get some Jesus juice up in this bitch.
White that. Yeah, I don't think that is what you actually want.
No, I think that's exactly what the priest wants.
Squeeze the Jesus till the juice runs down his leg, or what? What the fuck is going on here? Moving forward, White had a number.
Sound like a Zeppelin record.
White had a number of
the Jesus song.
White had a number of early newspapers along his way, and Kellogg would work to help publish them, one of which was the Health Reformer. Directed as most of them were at the Seventh-day Adventist members. I may start saying SDA because I started abbreviating it because there's a lot to type.
So, like, my realm right now, the Seventh-day Adventists are, like, a fairly substantial crew of people. Like, if somebody says, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, I don't really... it's not like I've never heard of that. At this point in time, like, how established do you think the Seventh...
In Michigan especially, they were relatively established.
Okay, so
and
this is
a huge part of the temperance movement.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of the temperance people were Seventh-day Adventists.
Because I really don't know with these...
Yeah, I mean, now it's you don't run into that many of them. You've heard of it. You have met one or two of them, but you just don't run into many of them. They also don't pronounce it like they used to.
It's like the only obscure sects I know these days
founded
are the Quakers.
In 1863.
Well,
Battle Creek, Michigan. That's when the Seventh-day Adventist Church was founded.
Yes,
but what does your sign-up sheet look like? Who's on the guest list?
So, figure
the Kellogg's.
What, yeah, in a period of 30 years, they got that big. And so we're talking, what, 140 years, 150 years since its inception? Yeah. I mean, I don't think anything's grown that fast since Christianity.
That's fair. That is kind of wildfire. Mormonism is a little bit newer, I think. Mm. But
excuse me, Scientology.
So you know, this paper that he was helping publish focused on temperance, health, vegetarianism, and natural remedies. This would deeply influence the young Kellogg. Showing great promise, the church would send Kellogg to Hygio-Therapeutic College in New Jersey in 1872.
This was a quote-quote college established by Russell Thatcher Trawl that taught hydrotherapy. They were the first college in the U.S. to accept both men and women, but their methods were a bit strange, suggesting that water could cure almost all ailments. This would also seat deeply in our young Kellogg.
Well, hold on here, okay?
Yes.
They're not too far off, because if you bathe yourself and you drink clean water, you've got a better shot of actually staying alive.
Yeah, we're going to, okay? We get this into some of that.
This isn't, like, they're too far off whack. I mean, maybe they did come up with this little thing. Hey, you know what? Potable water and bathe. Huh. People live.
It was.
Well, I don't know what this new fancy-fangled stuff is, but it's called water, and it's been around since all, ever.
And for those of the scholars in our audience, they might want to refer back to our previous episode, Lost in the Midst of Time, known as Raw Sewage.
Yeah, right.
Where this has been covered, that dealing with raw sewage was one of the greatest inventions of mankind. But what are they doing at this college? Are they doing like sensory deprivation tanks? Or are they just kind of a nice pool?
Kind of.
Do they have a nice pool?
Yes, they have a nice pool as well.
They probably have several.
We're gonna.
They got some sort of aqua spa.
I didn't look into the college too much, but we learn about what he learned at that college in quotes.
I'm thinking they got a good pool, so that's like a nice
We get
place.
Into what
that's
happened
nice
there.
College.
They have a number
probably
of them.
Saltwater pool, you know. Yes. It doesn't. You don't need
heavily
to clean
salinated.
It off,
you
know?
Yeah.
Well, you can tell a lot about a college if they got a schlocky pool.
Right.
Don't go to that college.
Yeah.
You know, you want a nice pool at the even if you never go in there.
Yeah.
You want to know that they can pay the heating bill on that pool.
Because if every time you walk by, all you see is just this thing that's just molded over. There's no water in it. Hasn't been in it.
You can tell.
1943.
You can tell because like if you have a pool that isn't listen, I got a hot tub, and if you got a pool that hasn't been maintained, you can tell
in three seconds
what the maintenance budget is here on this school, and so then you can tell in 3 seconds more what your dorm room's going to look like and the kind of schlocky teacher you're going to get, probably some 16-year-old who has no education whatsoever teaching you.
So after completing the Quack Water School, Kellogg would head to the University of Michigan Medical School. He would transfer to Bellevue Hospital Medical College in New York City after that. He received his medical doctorate in 1875. He would go on to study surgery in London and Vienna, becoming a notably qualified and skilled surgeon. So I've mentioned this guy's bonkers,
but
he was actually supposedly really good at what he was doing, so I got to give him credit there.
Yeah, but let's face it.
That's about all the credit I'm going to give him back.
Okay, 1875.
It's a low bar. This is Civil War era stuff. They didn't have
it
anesthetics.
But look at how much schooling he went to comparatively. Like
People were literally just chiseling
out a sign that said doctorin and hanging it up outside their shop, and they were a doctor. This guy was actually educated.
Doctor was about the same thing back then as saying you owned a hacksaw. That's what that meant.
A pair of pliers.
Pair of pliers and a hacksaw.
And the reason you could find the better doctor is the hacksaw didn't have as much rust as the other one.
Yeah. It was sort of like hiring a doctor back then. It was sort of like now when you hire a guy to build a shed. It's about like that, yeah.
It's like when you go to buy a used car, you never quite know what you're going to get.
So don't you worry, though. All this education would not move him away from his religion. He would take over as editor of Health Reformer in 1874 and change the name to Good Health. In 1879, where he would remain editor until his death. He would preach abstinence from alcohol, tobacco, and sex, as well as vegetarianism, regular exercise, fresh air, drinking water, like drinking quantity of water, and many other things that are known to be good for us today.
So he's Jack LaLanne.
The sex thing aside. Yeah.
Abstinence, I mean, how much syphilis was running around? How much gonorrhea? How many?
And they had
STD?
No cure for
it. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, well, hey, do you know what? Do you want your penis to stay on? Don't go stick it in strange places.
Turn green and have blisters?
Right. Don't go stick it in strange places. Stay away from prostitutes. Because, you know, all of this stuff. Hey, let's not do this.
There's that plus if you avoid sex, you avoid the lead-ins to sex, like hanging out in bars or street corners, spending all your money.
The nightlife in general.
Spending all your money on high-cut shorts. We've all been there. You know, it's like You avoid all that stuff.
And how much money do you get to save to tie to the church?
I think I think one of the big things about abstinence though is like, yes, you do live longer, but do you really want to?
Your quality of life.
Do you really want to live longer?
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
okay,
it's like I lived to 101, only had sex twice.
So
is
this
that
is,
good?
This
I don't
is
know. You know, you got to sort of
pretty much
the scales
the point.
There.
You never
this,
had a good porterhouse, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This is pretty much the point in the story where it gets really thick. Are you ready?
Not like a porterhouse.
Really thick is something guys who are short say.
He would start to treat people, mostly children, for their addiction to masturbation. Some of his methods were extreme, as mentioned in the beginning.
Hot sauce?
Get some giddy up.
Whoa, fucking way worse. Such as putting a sound in the penis urethra and electrocuting the device while also shooting water up the tube.
You might want to explain what a sound is.
It's a tube that goes in the urethra of a penis. That's what it is.
Usually
it's not for everybody, and I wouldn't recommend Google searching it unless you're at home and alone and safe, maybe using a VPN.
And have a therapist on standby.
These are done both on men and women, and it is distinguished from a catheter by the singular difference of being a rigid metal device as opposed to a flexible rubber thingy.
Yes.
So you can imagine the discomfort of having this thing shoved up there.
And then electrocuted while forcing tons of water through it.
Well, we've all done that, yeah.
Yeah, water. It's that cure-all. Yeah.
Another rather
this
violent...
This is an idea, taking water just a bit too far.
Another... Well, this is the water. That's the hydrogen.
Forcing water up
college
there.
Thing.
So, like... Yeah. So he's forcing water up into your bladder.
While electrocuting.
Like... So you've really got to pee, and you're being electrocuted.
It's
but you
like
can't
a
pee.
Penis enema.
Yeah, it's like a penis enema, yeah.
It's with electricity.
Or, well, no, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, this could have been administered on women. I don't know.
This one was a penis one.
Oh, okay.
The women one.
How did the women one go?
Another rather violent treatment he practiced was to put carbolic acid on the vaginal area to disfigure it and make it less pleasurable to touch.
That's like battery acid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's general mutilation. I didn't write it down, but he was known to surgically remove the clitoris.
Yeah, female castration.
That's a different thing. But like, who sits there with carbolic acid on their vulva and whatnot, and is like, this is okay?
Children who have been masturbating too much because God said so, or something.
I can't imagine that.
They're
this
mainly
doesn't...
children that are. Getting
how many?
This.
Why would you sit there for that?
Strap you in. Seriously.
Which parent actually gets to the point where it's like, hey,
yeah,
you
that's
know what?
Another question.
We right got it, this little problem is so far out of control that we're just going to dump some acid on little Annie.
Okay, so this is some more shit I didn't write down because it's just fucking
no.
horrible. But one of the things he would do is, or encourage parents to do, is to sneak up on their children to try and catch them masturbating. One of the ways they would figure out that girls had been sexually active or masturbating is they would see the damage to the hymen. And so,
oh,
like, the
Lord.
Parents were encouraged to look at the hymen. So now you've got the sexual...
Oh, my God.
Creepy fucking sexual predator looking at the poor girl as well. Like, it was
okay,
fucking horrific.
I'm ready for the wrap-up.
Told you it gets fucking thick.
Yeah. You know, how many people were riding horses back then?
It's a lot of the shit I did not write down.
Because it's been proven that the hymen
that'll
can rupture.
Break. Yes.
Oh, man, John, you got the I rode horses excuse?
It's so fucking...
Well, it's true.
It's
I mean,
it's,
oh...
So, the hymen can break from...
So he would also...
Horse riding. You know, like jumping...
Yeah.
He would also sew the foreskin together on a penis to prevent erections.
How do you pee?
Just enough opening, I guess.
Difficultly.
Catheter. Sew it around a catheter. I mean.
Oh my fuck! It's so horrible.
It's not like you could control. You can't control morning wood.
This is demented.
There were cages. He wasn't necessarily the cage guy, but there were other people that were doing cages with spikes in them.
Hey, people make money off of that.
Yes, I know. Mm-hmm.
Stop it.
Yeah, those people take it off.
The industry's gotten very different angle now.
Mean. There were no safe words.
No,
there were no safe words back then.
Well, I think if somebody's under 18, a safe word is a little bit. That's not an excuse.
Yeah. So we're pretty much through the genital destruction bullshit.
The Mengele portion.
There's going to be a little bit more later, but
this is all Dr. Mengele stuff.
It's horrible. Fucking terrifying. So Kellogg had so infused his medical ideas with his religious ones that he had started to preach essentially that leading a boring life led to a healthy life, opposed to coffee and tea.
Getting back to what I was saying.
Coffee and tea, as well as spices like cinnamon, pepper, and really kind of anything that gave flavor. He sought to live a very bland life. He would teach that exciting foods like meat and spices would lead to mental and physical excitement, and hence masturbation. The obvious cure would be living without any excitement at all.
So was this guy also, like, I'm trying to cover all the senses here. Was this guy also against listening to any pleasant music?
I didn't see anything about music. And, like, the movie Road to Wellville has record players in it, but that, again, is not historically accurate at all, that movie. Because, like, people are fucking happy. I don't know about the music thing.
I'm thinking if this guy had lived in modern times, he would have been a Kenny G fan.
Maybe.
At best.
It was something.
Wow. This is a really horrible person. I'm embarrassed I've ever bought any of this cereal. This is hideous.
The music should not partake of an unbiblical, inappropriate, worldly nature or rock style. It should lift us to heaven and point to God and not to us.
No.
The spirit of prophecy has some wonderful counsel regarding music and its influence, including the use of drums. In other words, no drumming.
Drums. No use of drums.
Might get you wood.
Well, there goes Beethoven's Ninth Symphony there.
There is no need for a sub.
Okay. I don't.
Okay, so cheaper stereo. Trying to see the upside here. Yeah. You can just listen to it on a crappy pack of Marlboro cigarette size transistor AM radio.
A portable Crosley.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you're good. Okay, so that's the upside. Yeah. Upside, you know,
what the fuck are the rest of what are they doing with the rest of the money?
That would be, well, I guess trying to buy these dopey vegetarian stuff, which, like, listen, if your girlfriend or boyfriend ever says, I think I'm going to be a vegetarian, wait for your grocery bill to score.
I'm surprised this guy didn't invent kale chips, but we're getting there.
Ooh.
So,
now you've gone into the danger zone.
War zone.
Yeah.
Seaweed.
So,
do not speak about kale chips.
I actually do like seaweed.
Kale chips will make you long for seaweed, Bob.
Right?
I love seaweed compared to kale chips.
Yeah, there's sea salt in it, at least.
Yeah.
So, keep in mind that his religion was and is very exclusionary. He had developed a tendency towards selective breeding, a.k.a. eugenics.
God,
he was opposed to
horrible.
It is. He was opposed to breeding between humans of differing colors in a puritanical way. Do note that he would become a lifelong friend of Sojourner Truth, who is one of your other social media aunt.
Well, she was a big... Wasn't she a huge temperance person?
Mm-hmm. She was. She was also not white.
Yep.
Well, how is he a friend of hers?
Well, I'm not certain, though, that he was.
Let me
that he was against other races. He was just against the mixing of races.
It's complex. Let me finish.
It's a some of my best friends are black kind of person.
Yeah,
that's what we're talking about.
It's
here.
Just again, it's complex. Let me finish.
Yeah.
So, he would become a lifelong friend of Sojourner Truth, and even reportedly donate some skin to help her with a graft at some point in time. He would also become a longtime friend of Booker T. Washington. And as we will discuss soon, probably next paragraph or two, adopted 8 kids, most of whom were not white. He also had a staff of interracially mixed nurses and caregivers, so he wasn't technically a racist. He was a eugenicist. Right. I know it's a very fine line.
Yeah, it is. It's everybody their own. They just stay in their own tribe kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, he believed in keeping a race strong. Mm-hmm. And by doing his version of that was to keep it pure. So if the white race is going to be strong, only white people in it. If the Latinx race is going to be strong, only Latinx people in it.
Okay,
it,
Latinx is oriental now, just so you know.
No more mixing in anything.
Yeah. You're not allowed to love who you love.
Latinx is because Latino and Latina
are gender discriminant. Latinx is in between.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that Latinx at this stage of the game is now the same, has the same tone as saying Oriental. Like,
everybody is against it. this guy was, I know it's a very fine line. A eugenicist, not a racist, really. None of it's good. I need to ring the bell on myself. Yeah, none of it's fucking good. In February of 1879, he would marry Ella Ervilla Eaton.
I'm trying to figure out adopting kids when you already have 17 kids.
No. He's one of 17.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's John Kellogg Jr.
He probably experimented on his penis so much it didn't work properly anymore. That's why he had to adopt.
Plus, it's hard to have kids when you can't have pleasure from sex.
I'm getting there. Nothing is good.
Yeah.
Kellogg would go to his grave claiming the two never consummated their marriage and claiming he was still a virgin. The couple, during their lifelong marriage, would foster almost 50 kids and adopt 8 of them. As mentioned, most of the kids they adopted were not white, but they were all raised in the faith.
This is very Jim Jones in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, kind of Jim Jones.
Where he doesn't fuck costumes. Everybody.
Yeah, and you're living this thing of...
this quote-unquote idyllic life.
Well, and also this thing of, like, saying that you celebrate another race, but you want to keep your distance from them.
It's a little bit
some of my best friends are black. It has this tinge to it that's like, huh, I think you're actually...
Well, next week's going to be fun, too. So back to his doctrine. In 1876, he had been appointed to the Superintendent of Western Health Reform Institute, an organization of doctors and patients who were devoted to the teachings of the SDA Church. This would later become called the Battle Creek Sanatorium. It should be noted that sanatorium was a word that Kellogg had invented in an effort to get away from sanitarium, which was a place for the mentally unwell. He wanted his place to be a place to find inner joy, inspiration.
Leave me be.
He wanted his place to be a place to find inner joy, inspiration, and greater health, physically, mentally, and spiritually. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, this was a place of bare bones solitude, complete with a quilt to sleep on, no mattress, straight on the floor, a quilt at maximum. Because a full night's sleep, in his mind, was a decadence and not good for you. They also had a machine that would shake a person violently enough to encourage a healthy bowel movement, essentially literally shake the shit out of you.
What do you mean, a vibrating toilet seat?
No, it was like they strapped you in this giant chair and it rattled you enough. It literally
shook the shit out of you. Use this every time you had a bowel movement?
Frequently, you were supposed to use it to break obstructions, was his belief. Again, he's not, like... for all of his medical abilities, he's trying to use non-medical ways to cure ailments.
Or non-common sense ways. I mean, this sounds very... not that we don't have... we have the same thing now, though. We have the same thing now. So
yes, we do.
I don't know. We shouldn't... these kook medical theories that just, like, pop up where it's just, like, they get, you know, ascorbation beyond their common sense understanding is beyond me. I don't know how it happens, but yeah. It does.
So he also invented a device that would not only perform an enema, but would force gallons of water up your ass every single minute.
Oh, like the double Bardex nozzle?
Like the shower head that's not economical? Yeah.
Well, that's been a thing in that whole little sphere is how to get stuff mm-hmm. up there
quickly.
Yeah,
he reportedly used this device every morning, sometimes twice a day, for years, and even after stopping the use of that particular device,
how the hell was he wearing white suits?
Even after stopping using that particular device, he would have a morning enema every day. He later switched to yogurt instead of water.
White suits.
It's baffling, right? I don't. I told you there's nothing good.
White suits!
There's nothing good.
White suits!
There's a lot of people to this day that are
crazy for that stuff.
My kid's mom went through coffee enema phase for a while. Yeah. It was bonkers. I'm like, wait, you're doing meth and coffee enemas?
No, there's people that are convinced that you have to rinse out, you know, essentially your large intestine every day in order to maintain health. And it's like, so
there's bacteria up in that bitch that's supposed to be there.
You know, if you're going to be in that place, then you cannot believe in evolution. If you're there, you don't believe in evolution. You must believe
drinking, bitch.
You must believe in some sort of intelligent design thing where it needs, you know, like changing the oil on a car.
Right.
It needs this kind of thing rather than your system developed to handle itself, and therefore you don't need this extraneous apparatus.
That's a very weird angle, but I could see it.
And I've never understood it, but like I have met endless numbers of people who ascribe to this position that, like, you should be doing, like, well beyond what we understand as a common enema, like a high colonic and all that sort of stuff, that, like, if you don't do that, your health is in danger. And it's like, 100 years ago, did they have plastic tubing to shove up there?
For what it's worth, you know? This guy is heavily responsible for those people today.
Yeah.
No, it's existed.
He wrote a number of books.
Well, Marquis de Sade.
But you know, I mean, point taken. This guy might have been the guy who proliferated it. But, like, you know, it's been a thing for a really long time where people are freaked out that they've got to rinse out their insides, otherwise they're going to die.
Because that corn kernel's going to kill you or whatever.
It makes no sense.
I was watching one documentary where this person had to have part of their lower intestine completely removed, and they. They actually had to take fecal matter from someone else.
This is a new treatment. Yeah, they're doing that. They're taking fecal matter from a person, putting it back in them to introduce the bacteria that are supposed to be there. Because when they remove it, this is a crate. It's relatively new.
Yeah, but
totally heard about it.
Yeah. Eat some yogurt or go to Germany. Go on. This conversation has taken a bit of a turn.
So Kellogg would also perform.
I want to run away.
Up and to the left.
Kellogg would also perform his hydrotherapy at this place, consisting of different temperature baths, often lasting hours, sometimes even days or weeks. He believed that water would wash the maladies away. Well,
weeks in the bath?
Yes.
Is this called the Hefner treatment?
Not in charge.
Now,
that can't be good for you.
Well, sitting in a bath, even if it's a very comfortable bath and you've got some really good reading
material. They do
material.
Really hot, really cold, really medium, really hot, really cold, really medium.
That's been going on since Roman times, okay?
Even if it's...
But for weeks?
Right. No, don't do that.
See, that's bad for me, even as somebody who has who takes an extraordinary...
Enough showers for three people.
Number. My water usage on bathing is... off the charts. Nobody bathes
and you never
and
complain about it
more than me.
It's one of those things. It's like it's the air conditioning bill. I'm just gonna deal with it. Your water bill, that's my bathing bill.
I'm the one cleaning the drain.
Yeah,
but yet every woman I'm ever with is like, Rupert, you take a huge amount of showers and stuff, and I'm like, do you want me dirtier? Is that what you're saying? You'd prefer me dirtier?
Imagine you're in these week-long bath things, right?
Where do you go
to every time you get out of a bath, this is when you go to the bathroom. They give you an enema and some good vegetarian food. And then back in the water you go.
I think
that's the regimen.
I think that's a contradiction in terms, good vegetarian food.
So it was not long after he took charge of the sanatorium that it would start to develop fame in the U.S. as well as trickling into Europe. Obscure health regimens were en vogue, and Kellogg had cornered one. Even if it was religiously based. So this is where he branches away from the SDA and starts treating pretty much anybody. His clientele grew swiftly, and he needed a way to feed all these new clients a boring and healthy breakfast that would not encourage them to masturbate. Because remember, that's his goal, right?
Yeah.
His solution developed alongside.
Sometimes I eat a certain kind of, you know. Sometimes, like if you slice that grapefruit just right,
I need to fucking spooge on it.
I need to. I don't even know how that works. Like the number of times I've eaten breakfast and been like, "Man, that was a good breakfast." I'm going to be in the bathroom for about 10 minutes. Right. Like, when has that ever happened? Like, that's the last time ever I'm in the mood to just have some fun time, some me time. Uh-huh. That's like the, it's like never. It's like virtually never, right after breakfast.
Bagel and lox, jack it off.
Bagel and lox, so no. Yeah.
You just started your day. It's not like, you know, no, just no.
So his solution to this need for a super bland breakfast, developed alongside with his younger brother, William Keith Kellogg, was to follow the design laid out by bland food pioneer Sylvester Graham. You may know him for the Graham cracker. It is not what you know nowadays, folks. Mm-hmm. Had no sugar in it to begin with.
Oh, I'm quite sure that...
that's a bad cracker.
Imagine a Graham cracker with no sugar in it.
Do you know those
can't
crackers?
Make a cheesecake.
Hardtack.
Yeah. The fucking crackers things that shingle, come in the MREs.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what a Graham cracker was.
Yeah, it was awful. So he was another minister of the bland life thing. Graham had invented the wafer-like Graham cracker, or Graham, wait, full what? Of grain and no flavor, and Kellogg saw promise in this. He and his brother set out to find or create a ready-to-eat breakfast that would be bland enough to keep people from enjoying themselves, as well as provide the basic nutrients every human needs, even today. They started with a cereal we now call granola. There was a couple other varieties they kind of copied. In its most basic form. They were not the first, but William Kellogg had an eye for marketing, and he got it out there a little bit. Their brand got some. And it helped that the sanatorium was doing well. So, like, right. Rich and famous are eating this. It's like, obviously, it's good for you, right? Do whatever Russell Brand does. So this was not enough for John Kellogg Jr. He needed something no one else had and worked tirelessly on a solution. The golden answer was corn crushed into a pulp and toasted into a flaky substance. He could add no other grains, because that would make it too exciting, and no sugar, or he did add other grains, but it made it more exciting, but no sugar, because that was evil, as we said, or anything else that he considered pollutant. So no salt, spice, meats, nothing. Nonetheless, breakfast cereal was born, and at the hands of John Kellogg and an opposer, C.W. Post, who was a former client of his sanatorium, mm-hmm. we got what we know as breakfast cereal today.
Yep, and there was a... I knew that this sounded more than familiar to me. There's this show called The Food That Built America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they don't talk about any of the crazy in there.
Mm-mm.
No, they have him pensioned up
this
as...
This guy with this nice little place, this health resort, and he invented breakfast cereal.
Uh-huh.
And that's... Yeah, that's much of what the story is told as. And
CW Post, at least they had like a college out on Long Island. that's kind of cool. Got that.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, CW Post College.
Yeah, season 2, episode 16. Dr. John Kellogg and his brother start a revolution in breakfast. Well, rival CW Post takes direct aim at an empire of his own.
Well, Post had eaten Kellogg's cereals. At the mm-hmm. sanatorium. And so where do you think you fucking got the idea?
Well, I think it's kind of ironic that now breakfast cereal is among the most unhealthy things you can eat today.
Right. Almost every breakfast cereal is loaded with sugar nowadays. Yes, mm-hmm. we will get to that.
Might as well just eat a bowl of sugar.
So the two Kellogg brothers started a company called Sanitas to market and sell their new invention. Will Kellogg wanted to sell more cereal, but John Kellogg wanted to focus on his sanitarium, or whatever it was. Will, his fucking place.
Torture hall.
Yeah. Will also wanted to start adding sugar to sweeten the cereal, knowing this, knowing it would help the stuff sell, and John would have nothing of it. This eventually developed into a spat, and then into an all-out fight.
Hey, one of them turned into Frosted Flakes, the other one turned into Corn Flakes.
Actually, no. Not really. So William would leave the sanatorium.
Sounds like they got laconic with each other.
Yeah.
And then terse.
Right.
Ooh.
William would leave the sanatorium and start a new cereal company, the Kellogg's we know today. It was originally W, whatever his middle name was, Kellogg.
So why do we get the chicken as part of the Kellogg's logo?
The corn, I think. The grains and the corn, I think. I don't know. It's much more modern.
It seems like
anyway,
a key part of this whole story.
This eventually developed
getting
into
no resolution.
Wait. I
want my day in court.
William developed the Kellogg's we know today. He would actually sell his shares of the original company, Sanitas, to his brother, but keep selling the cereal at a sanatorium using Kellogg's name. So, I got that backwards. John Kellogg sold his shares to William Kellogg, who continued the Kellogg cereal thing, but John made his version and sold it at the sanatorium.
So you got to go to a loony bin to buy this cereal
from John.
That's it sounds like it's going to be very bad for sales. I mean, Kellogg they didn't have any internet back
Kellogg then. Had a Welsh friend, Nancy Richards, who suggested a rooster, as the Welsh translation was Cylog, Kylog or whatever. Its pronunciation similar to Kellogg.
Really?
Also, so the rooster was a symbol for the start of the day, back before alarm clocks. Therefore, it made sense to connect this.
It is also something that fights, is very excitable, and fucks everything near it. Like, that's what roosters do.
So it might be a little bit detrimental to the no sex image.
Yeah, I don't think it works.
Yeah, it doesn't really work.
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
I mean, it's native.
Wake up with Kellogg's.
Well, I mean, you could call it. Some could call it a rooster. Others,
because you're not waking up to rub one off.
Some could call it a rooster. Others could call it a cock. yeah, just saying.
Cock-a-doodle-you.
So this battle between the brothers ended up in court as each brother sued the other over who got to use the name. William won after years in court. It also caused a rift between the brothers that would never heal. They barely spoke to one another for the rest of their lives. So our John Kellogg may have helped invent cereals, but his brother really is the one that publicized cereals, and John eventually ended up kind of out of the game, making his own.
Well, I think when you get in a lawsuit,
like,
when you get
anti-masturbation,
you get involved in a lawsuit with family members, communication,
it doesn't go well.
Tend to drop off
that's
a
why
little bit.
Divorces are notorious for shitty things. John would stick to the sanitarium, and William would become the cereal mogul. Eventually, John's sanitarium lost popularity to some extent, but during his run...
No, shit, I wonder why.
Well, but during,
the food sucks, you can't rub one out. They shove shit up your dick.
But a week,
and up your ass.
A week at a pool sounds kind of...
Can you imagine how wrinkly your fucking skin would be after a week at a pool? You'd be like sloughing off skin, right?
I'm not cleaning that pool. I'm not cleaning that pool. That's the main thing.
Eventually John's sanatorium lost popularity. But during his run, he treated many famous people, a couple of presidents, and some of the wealthiest folks at the time. He had made a decent living. Henry Ford was a common visitor and also a friend.
How did I know?
We're back to the eugenics part,
I know? Hank Ford shows up. Hey, you're kind of into this weird little racial thing. I am too. Wow. Yeah. Another brilliant guy who
earlier episode of Problematic Person.
Yeah. Brilliant guy who had a dark side.
In 1906, John Kellogg, along with Irving Fisher.
God, when does this fucker die?
Charles Davenport, 1940. And Charles Davenport founded the Race Betterment Foundation.
Fuck, we still got 30 years of this bastard.
Did Charles Davenport invent the Davenport?
I doubt it.
You didn't do your research, Bob.
No, I didn't.
Sparse accommodations, if ever I've seen them.
The Race Betterment Foundation was exactly what it sounded like. It was a surprise.
No place good, right?
No place good.
Nope.
It was an organization founded to help each race remain pure and, in their eyes, better, especially the white one.
That came from an 18th century Massachusetts furniture maker named A.H. Davenport.
Is that right?
A.H. Davenport and Company.
Man, that John is swift. That's why you're on this program. That's why you get the network bucks.
Wow.
There you go, right there. It's this ability demonstrated right before your ears.
Hey, we're back to racial betterment. Come on, man.
I thought we were better off with Davenport personally.
me too. This seems a road fraught.
Because you could actually have sex on a Davenport.
I'm thinking they had a lot of registries and big books.
Oh, dude, excellent guesses. So the organization would organize the Race Betterment Conference for people to discuss their eugenics and have talks about it. But they would also host a best baby contest in which babies were judged by their perceived racial perfection.
This is so messed
Hard
up.
Hard pause.
This is so messed up. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how many races they can, you know, not that I believe race is a thing, but like, what did they consider? Like, this is the best white baby?
Uh-huh.
mostly white.
How
babies.
Is that any different than any of these little baby pageants that are going on right now?
So mostly white babies, but they had classifications for other colors,
like best black baby.
Yeah, again, this is the exact same as all of these little baby pageants that are happening right fucking now.
You see how much joy I had writing this?
This is so messed up. There's like nothing good here. I'm trying to imagine the score sheet. Like, how do you score these babies? I don't know. Best Eurasian baby? Like, what's the score sheet on that?
They did it for years.
Wow.
It wasn't like just once.
Wow.
It went on for years.
Was the Olympic Committee ever considering this? Probably. Those guys are kind of nuts.
The industry has grown to include about 250,000 pageants, all for ages up to 17 years old. That is today.
No, you're talking about Miss America or
no,
something.
No, I'm talking about beauty, child beauty pageants.
Yeah, that's up to 17.
But these aren't beauty pageants.
These are racial purity
correct.
Pageants.
How is it? Right. That's what it's turned into, though. These little things, okay, because the child beauty pageant started in 1964. By 1964, there were over 35,000.
Apparently, they started before that.
That's bullshit right here.
I don't know how these jack-offs like,
turned it into what we know today.
I don't know how these jack-offs get off the Civil War and the 14th Amendment and then say, let's start a racial beauty pageant and some breakfast cereal. I don't know how that like comes in on your itinerary.
Unbelievable,
of the
right?
Day. Wow.
So
this is messed up.
Just shove a gallon of water up your urethra.
Oh, well, that's true. You might do anything then. Yeah. So
other things our guy John Kellogg would do is he would propose a eugenic registry. Rupert called it.
There you go.
Basically, a human pedigree to help in keeping the races strong and pure. He wrote extensively about this and his health ideas.
It's like I'm listening to Heinlein right now.
He published a number of books and articles on both subjects. There are any number you can go look up easily on the internet and see exactly how horrible this person was. Having invented many things during his life, from the chair that shook you so hard your bowels would empty to the crazy yogurt enema giver, it is said that he invented the mechanical horse for indoor exercise.
Ha! Ha! Ha!
So every honky tonk.
Ha! I think this is for a little bit more than that. Wow! That just went crazy off the... So when I see John Travolta...
An urban cowboy.
He's riding the eugenics racial purity horse. Yes.
How would he feel about a Sibian?
That's like...
What are those Sibian machines?
That's like messed up.
It's so much.
I think you can't make this anything worse. You started off with like weird...
religion, 17 kids.
Non-anesthetized circumcision, and you actually... drove it down from there. You are justifying our logo.
We're in subterranean vaults now.
That is so...
straight fucking downhill, folks.
Invented the mechanical horse to explain broken hymens. That's what this is all about. Wow. I don't even know if they had actual hydraulic pumps back then, because that's how those things work.
Yeah.
They probably had somebody on each side with ropes going like this.
Or you know, his enema machine filled with yogurt. That's hydraulics, roughly, right?
Well,
put a lid on that shit. Just pump.
Everybody's done it when you've rented the backhoe for the day, and you tell your girlfriend, hey, you want to get it in the bucket and ride? You know, I mean, everybody's done that, right? You know, I don't know.
You're welcome.
That is a tasty, tasty tidbit.
I found that nugget. I was like,
very
yes.
Tasty.
You're never going to think of the Sibian machine the same way either.
I hate Sibian machines. So, I never have to look at another Joker on a Sibian machine. Oh, God. It's like the most boring thing ever.
John Harvey Kellogg would die December 14th, 1940.
Yay!
1943. At the age of 91 in Battle Creek, Michigan, where he lived majority of his life. It is rumored that he wrote an apology letter to his brother on his deathbed, and his secretary didn't deliver it, perhaps even threw it away. Although most people know him for his help in the creation of the cereal industry that we have today, In recent years, his methods, racism, and outlook on eugenics have come into light, and his memory, although more accurate, is not nearly as kind. So, this guy, wow, I've been wanting to do this guy for a while. I'm so glad John picked him. Is bonkers and an absolute demon of a person. And somehow, this demon of a person taught us about hygiene, a decent fucking diet, exposure to sunlight for vitamin D. He's part of the reason we have calisthenics today. Like, somehow, this fucking batshit loony guy got some reasonable shit under control for us. And so it's a real struggle. And then the fact that he's a eugenicist, not a racist, again, really hard to deal with that one. I don't like the guy at all. But I like his story because it's crazy. And some of it was not terrible. Like, again, hygiene. Bathe occasionally. Some of that shit. Not bad. We didn't have grasp on that. Fucking horrible person, though.
I'm still shocked that somebody didn't off him. I mean, he made it to 91 years old. And somewhere along the line there, between sounding, electrifying, and flooding a penis, and gallons of water as enemas, you'd think he would have been attacked. And his diminutive frame wouldn't have been able to stand up to it. But still, he was touted as groundbreaking. And, well, he was. Really. I mean, do you need to have some veggies in your diet? Yeah, you kind of do. Do you need to drink clean water? Yeah. Raw sewage, that's a thing. Think about it. But I can't be certain that I wouldn't have punched him in the face.
So, I don't buy it when, like, you got these guys that have, like, a few good ideas. And, frankly, the good ideas here are very few. Counterbalanced with some really bad ideas that fly in the face, especially of the current zeitgeist. So, you know, this idiot is sitting here with the end of the Civil War and all of this stuff, and he's sort of, you know, I'm, you know, interjecting my own opinion into the whole thing, but, like, he puts in this whole, like, no, I don't really have any problem with other races. I just want to maintain their purity. And that's trying to, you know, split the straw a little bit too close. I think that when you're trying to do that, you're basically saying, like, I'm okay with them living here. I just don't want my daughter dating one of them. That's what you're saying there. And I've personally been in that experience where, you know, I've dated people where, like, the person I was dating even said, like, no, my parents aren't racist. They just want to maintain the racial purity. It's a different thing. And I'm like, no, that is the thing. That is the thing. That's like saying it's not that the car is broken. It just doesn't run. You know, it's the same thing. And I have some tolerance of that belief. I have some tolerance of racism. If you go back to, like, God knows where, you know, when you're into the AD and BC years and all that kind of thing. But once you get into the post-Civil War period, if you're still doing that stuff, I really got to question you.
This sounds like something that friends do.
Well, I thought we were friends.
I'm extremely uncomfortable with that.
I know. Let me give you a hug.
Thank you.